Good morning, everyone. It's 8:30, so we can get started. My name is Marita Sommer. I'm a project coordinator with the National Association of Local Boards of Health. I received my master's in public health from American Military University and have been with NALBO for about a year now. Just to warn you all, I'm not a morning person and got in late from traveling last night. So if I start to ramble, just throw your hand up or throw something at me or, yeah. And since it is a smaller group, there's some natural breaks in the presentation. If you have questions, feel free to ask them. We don't have to wait till the very end. All right. So today we're going to try to meet several objectives. We're going to describe different types of boards of health, identify some public health guiding principles. We're also going to focus in on outlining the process of the National Public Health Performance Standards Program and learn how boards of health can use the governance assessment. In a little bit more detail, we're going to start out with a general group quiz to try to wake everybody up this morning and move into the three core functions of public health, also identify the 10 essential services of public health, go into the MPHPSP and the governance assessment, talk about improvement a little bit, and then we'll have a brainstorm exercise at the end to kind of work towards using your assessment results in order to prioritize areas for action. So the National Association of Local Boards of Health's mission is to strengthen and improve public health governance. And NALBO works to do that in several ways. We work to effectively and competently serve the public health needs of communities. We work to help boards become well connected to their stakeholders and others in the public health government. We encourage that boards are appointed by individuals who can effectively evaluate applicants, and we encourage that boards are comprised of individuals who have demonstrated the knowledge, skills, and abilities to effectively represent and serve the public. So for this quiz, feel free to shout out an answer, or if you're asleep, then we can move through it. So what are three types of Board of Health statutory authority? Yeah, there's governing. Anyone have another? Advisory and policymaking. So looking at the definitions a little bit, advising boards are those that report to health officers or to county commissioners or city township supervisors, and those individuals then act on the information to establish the policies and the programs and budgets for public health. Governing boards have a bit more power. Some of them establish local ordinances and regulations or have a stronger role in that policy development process. Most approve health department budgets and expenditures and fees for services, permits, and licenses. And most also evaluate and hire and fire the health officer. Policymaking boards encompass all of the definition of a governing board, but are also given the authority to set the policies, goals, and priorities that really guide the agency. So who serves on local boards of health, or on any board of health? Many of you. Different types of health professionals and community members that are interested in serving their jurisdictions. Boards are composed of at least three elected or appointed individuals throughout this country. A lot of state statutes designate who will sit on a board, if a physician or a veterinarian should be sitting on a board. And many Board of Health members are volunteers. So it's an interesting group to work with for me because it's people oftentimes that really care about the health of the communities. So what type of jurisdictions do boards serve? Boards serve city, county, tribal, district, local, and state jurisdictions. Throughout the country, there are over 64 different names for boards of health that serve in these different roles. And so sometimes identifying the peer relationships proves difficult when you look across states. And for some states, such as Texas that have actually all of these types of jurisdictional boundaries, it proves difficult for boards to work with each other. So some other names for local boards of health include community health boards, health advisory councils, some are known as medical societies, tribal boards, and some county commissioners also serve as a board of health. Does anyone know how many boards exist in the United States? Approximately 3,200 boards, depending on which type of definition you use. Some would say more because tribal boards, that definition hasn't really been fully defined yet. Of the 3,200 local boards, that serves approximately 20,000 local board of health members, or board of health members, excuse me. Over 70% of health departments have boards of health, and 80% of boards have governing and policymaking responsibilities. 70% of members are appointed, and 44 state codes address local boards of health. Some fun facts for you. Moving into a public health system, we usually define a public health system as all public, private, and voluntary entities that contribute to public health in a given area. This is also a network of entities, and they all have different roles and relations to each other in order to contribute to the well-being of a community. So taking a kind of a closer look, I have a egg chart or a web here, and this is just one example. Every city or county or state's map is going to look different. You probably have public health system members in your communities that aren't on this map. Most generally, the health department is in the center of the public health system in a community, and the board is in charge of overseeing that health department role. So looking a little bit more in detail about roles of the three types of boards of health within the system as they're a part of it, we can see that they really work to promote and protect public health. They work to be the link between the health department and the community by ensuring that the health department really accomplishes its mission and its vision. Boards advocate for public health. They can do this in several ways. They can advocate to policymakers in the community. They can also advocate directly to the community and also to the health department in order to increase health outcomes. The board also acts as a buffer between politics and the health department. They often do that in their role as advocates. As a Board of Health member, when you go in front of your policymaker, you know, be it a state representative or a local councilman, and advocate on behalf of your health department, you're really representing what that health department's needs are, and you're bringing with it the backing of the board and the backing of the health department. Some boards, as I said, hire and evaluate the health officer. All boards will either develop or make those recommendations to someone in the community. Many establish and approve budgets and also review the health department goals and objectives, looking at those mission and vision statements and ensuring that the health department is working to fulfill those. So moving into a few of public health guiding principles, I have a pyramid here showing the core functions of public health really is the base, and built on top of that are the 10 essential public health services. And the National Public Health Performance Standards Program has been taken by using the base, the core, and the 10 essential services that were built off that to develop an assessment tool. There are three core functions of public health. Those are assessment, policy development, and assurance. We'll look briefly at each of those. First, starting with assessment, you have a strategic or a systematic collection and analysis of data in order to provide the basis for your decision making. So So an example would be a community assessment. You're going to look at the needs of the community. You're going to look at the families, the individuals, and the entire community is going to come together to do this. The health department, the local hospitals, you'll bring in as many community partners as necessary to really look at this and develop a strategic plan. The National Public Health Performance Standards Program is also a form of assessment that you can use in your communities. The second core function is policy development, which encompasses problem identification, technical knowledge of possible solutions, and incorporating society's values into action. Identifying problems and developing a strategic, logical solution to a problem. One example that I know some have faced is to develop clean indoor air laws as part of a board role for policy development. And really with this stage as a board of health, the place where you need to start is to understand your jurisdictional law. You need to understand your state statutes, any local ordinances that have come into being. Because if you don't know the role that your board should play, you might cross some legal lines that could end up causing trouble in the future. So once you have that knowledge, you'll learn whether you should work in an advisory capacity, whether you can actually go and make policy, develop policy, and how all that should work. So it's a pretty tricky process at the beginning if you haven't been familiar with it, but once you work through it once, it becomes a lot easier. And one kind of helpful tip, if you haven't done much policy development as a board, is to, while you're going through it the first time, work to develop a policies and procedures document. That way you can work with your succession planning and others that come in after. Your orientation can also include some of that policies and procedures document for policy development. So the third core function of public health is assurance, which is the process of determining that services necessary to achieve agreed upon goals are provided, either by encouraging actions by other entities, by requiring such actions as regulation, or by providing services directly. Examples of this are accreditation systems that currently exist for laboratories and hospitals, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with Public Health Accreditation Board and their work. And we can talk about that a bit at the end of the presentation if anyone's curious to learn more about the accreditation and its launch in fall of 2011. So looking back, you have assessment, policy development, and assurance that every board of health is responsible for. So built on these core functions that were developed in 1988 by Institute of Medicine report came the 10 essential services of public health. And these were released in a statement, Public Health in America, really set a vision, a mission, and a purpose for public health. So the vision was healthy people in healthy communities. Pretty simple, what we do in public health. The mission was to promote physical and mental health and also to prevent disease, injury, and disability. So the two sides there. It was intended to do this by preventing epidemics and the spread of disease, by protecting against environmental hazards, by preventing injuries, promoting and encouraging healthy behaviors, responding to disasters and assisting communities in recovery, and assuring the quality and accessibility of health services. So a board of health plays a role in all of those purposes. And as I said, also what came out of this was the 10 essential services of public health. And here we have the core functions and essential service wheel. You see the three core functions on the outside, and in the inner color blocks, you have your 10 essential services. So for instance, monitoring health and diagnosing and investigating, essential service 1 and 2 fall under that assessment category. You can move all the way around, and then you see research is in the center as it is intended to improve all other 9 essential services. So So moving through, I know most of you are probably familiar with the 10 essential services. If you are, can I see a nod so I know how in depth to, okay, yeah, it looks like we're all on the same page. So number one is to monitor health, to identify and solve community health problems. Encompasses a lot of different community partners. And the board's role in this is more of an oversight. You know, the board probably isn't going out there and tracking and recording, and board probably shouldn't go out and track and record. But the board should ensure that the health department is receiving the information it needs, that the health department and the police department are working together in order to know what the crime rates are and examples such as that. The second is to diagnose and investigate health problems and hazards in the community. This works a lot with epidemiology, and again, the board plays that same 30,000 foot level, just ensuring that that the policies and procedures are in place to accurately investigate those health problems, and that they're being monitored, and source tracing is being done in a regulated fashion. Essential service number three is to inform, educate, and empower people about health issues. This is really the outreach of the essential services. And depending on the board's role, some do play a much more hands-on role in the community, establishing policies for mass media campaigns and working with the health department to look at cultural competencies and ensuring that the language used in pamphlets, you know, is adequate to serve the needs of the community. Oh, I didn't realize that moved. All right. Essential service number four is to mobilize community partnerships to identify and solve health problems. The board really should be going and trying to think outside the box, trying to look at that public health system web and make sure that everyone that needs to be involved is involved. Especially as, you know, we're moving in to some new activities. One of the health reform stipulations was looking at hospitals doing community health assessments. And I know that they're still working out all of the nitty-gritty logistics of that and how the health department might be involved. But that's really one area where the board can foster a partnership with some of those local hospitals and ensure that everyone is brought together in order to fulfill that community health assessment and make sure that it's done to your community's benefit rather than just done. Essential service number five is to develop policies and plans to support individual and community health efforts. Through the first four essential services, you've heard me talk a lot about how boards can develop these policies and plans. And so this is probably the key essential service for boards. And understanding where you need to start on this is really critical. And just in my previous experience, it's also one of the most challenging aspects for many boards, often because of high turnover rates or there just hasn't been that succession planning. So regardless of what the board's role is, whether they should be advising on these things or whether they should actually be, you know, sitting down with attorneys and working out language, this essential service can really help communities. You look at some local policies that in the past few years have really swept across the nation. One example would be menu labeling. You know, you saw it in New York, you saw it in San Jose County, you saw it in Seattle, and all of a sudden it's a national law. And so local policies really do have a large effect. And the board, you know, especially in that case, the board played that role. They developed that. Essential service number six is to enforce laws and regulations that protect health and ensure safety. It's a 30,000 foot view for the board. And this is, you know, less about in enforcing, you know, physically going out, and more ensuring that the regulations exist and that the best regulations are in place for your community. Essential service number 7 is to link people to needed personal health services and assure the provisions of health care when otherwise unavailable. This service includes a lot of things from transportation to, again, that cultural competencies and language issues, and really about making sure that a whole system of care exists for individuals that need it in your community. Essential service number 8 is to assure a competent public and personal healthcare workforce. This ensures not only that your workforce exists, but that they have the training that's adequate, that there's money allocated in your budget to do that workforce development and ensure workforce competencies. Essential service number 9 is to evaluate effectiveness, accessibility, and quality of personal and population-based health services. This is looking at what are we doing and are we doing what we're doing in the best way that we can. Quality improvement is not a new phenomenon, but in public health, quality improvement has really taken off in the past few years, and this service really gets at that. Finally, essential service number 10 is research for new insights and innovative solutions to health problems. This is often done in partnerships with universities or local colleges, and the board is charged with ensuring that those partnerships exist so that research can be done. So then taking a look at our move up the pyramid, we come to the National Public Health Performance Standards Program, which is founded on the 10 essential services and 3 other core functions. In brief, the NPHPSP is a partnership effort to improve the quality of public health practice and performance of public health systems. The mission of performance standards is to improve the quality of public health practice and performance of public health systems by providing those performance standards and encouraging their use. Working with partnerships, really getting at that essential service to build a stronger foundation. It's also about promoting continuous quality improvement and about strengthening the science base for public health practice. A little bit about the history of performance standards. It was first launched in 1998, with version 1 being released in 2002. Version 2, which is what is currently used in the field, was released in October of 2007. Off to the side there, you can see the partners that are involved in this program. I assure you, it is definitely a partner-centered initiative. We meet several times a month over the phone and a couple times a year in person. We all have our roles. ASTO, the Association of State and Territorial Offices, is charged with the state tool. NACHO, the National Association of County and City Health Officials, works with the local tool. And NAWO works with the governance tool. And all three of us in version 1 and version 2 really helped to develop those by bringing in individuals from the field to improve the tools and strengthen them. The APHA is charged with communication and marketing of the tool. The Public Health Foundation is our data source. They develop all the reports after you complete an assessment. And the National Network of Public Health Institutes is our coordinator. They make sure that all of our other organizations are on the same page and that we're working together to really be effective. There's several reasons for performance standards. It establishes a baseline measure of the performance of the public health system, identifies your strengths and your weaknesses, initiates an improvement process, builds a lot of collaboration and communication where that might not have existed before, and it also improves public health system effectiveness. The local and the state tool deal a lot with the system. Whereas the governance tool looks at more oversight. It's also dealing with the system, but it's how is the board providing oversight of that system? Whereas the local and state actually bring in all the system partners together in order to go through each essential service and each model standard. So there are four main concepts applied in performance standards. And it's based on the 10 essential services, which we just looked at. It's focused on the overall public health system, describes an optimal level of performance, and it supports a process of quality improvement. And very quickly, since we've already looked at this, here's the 10 essential services again. It's focused on the system. So looking at that web again, especially as I just said, the local and the state tool will work to bring in community partners from all these different organizations into one room to communicate, collaborate. The governance instrument is a little bit different than the other two. The governance instrument brings in the board, maybe the health officer, maybe a few specialists from the health department, and it looks at how well are these being done. You know, is there an area that the board needs to encourage the health department or encourage community partners or encourage policymakers to really work harder at in order to improve the health of the community? The third core function is guiding principle of the performance standards is that optimal level of performance. It really sets a gold standard. There are very few places where a board or a health agency is going to score at that optimal level. That's our goal, you know, which is often just a little bit out of reach, but it does that in order to provide areas for improvement along each of the 10 essential services. And fourth is quality improvement. Standards should result in identification of improvement, and we'll have an activity at the end where we start to look at this. So here's a visual image of the three instruments. We have the state, the local, and the governance. Looking a little bit about past use, I apologize for the letters on each state kind of overlapping there. But this is the state instrument for version 2. So it's October 2007 through August 2010. And you can see that 28 states and the District of Columbia have completed the assessment. Looking at the local instrument during this same time period, now we can split it up into significant use, moderate use, limited use, and no use for each state. So you'd see in the dark blue, that's 67% or more local health departments have completed the assessment. Moderate is 33 to 66%, and limited is 1 to 32%. And as you all know, every state, you know, divides up its health departments much differently. And so some of that needs to be taken into account when viewing these maps. For the governance instrument, this is actually just showing local Board of Health use. We don't have maps yet on state Board of Health use or tribal board use. So you can see that, again, the same percentage breakdown, significant use, moderate use, limited use, and also a no Boards of Health. And this is based on a definition put forward by CDC about what a Board of Health is. And you know, as we learn more, we're finding that some of these states maybe have county commissioners that really do act as boards. Yes.
I may have missed this. What the white stands for?
No use. Yeah. Yes. So the governance instrument, by far, I mean, just looking at these three maps, you can see that not as many boards have undertaken this assessment. When I've talked to boards about this, a lot of it is that they are volunteers. The assessment takes 4 to 5 hours. And so that's very difficult to bring people together that, you know, have either full-time careers or full-time families and just everything else going on. Whereas the other two instruments, you do it during work hours. Another issue for this is that a lot of boards are still trying to identify what their role is, and it's a lot easier to go into an assessment if you know what your role is. So if you're thinking about doing this assessment, I would definitely recommend looking at those state statutes and local ordinances, identifying where you are, and then moving to it. And yeah, NABO definitely has a lot of that information already, so you don't have to go and search through the law journals if you're looking for it. I have some cards, and if you want some help identifying those areas, I'd be more than happy to. So looking at the governance instrument structure a little bit, it is designed around the 10 essential services, and there is one model standard for each essential service. So in monitoring, the first chapter of your governance instrument is going to be oversight of monitoring, is the model standard there. And it goes into some detail about what that optimal standard is. There are also discussion toolboxes in this instrument that help provide concrete examples. And as I've said a few times, it supports the oversight authority of the process. The governance instrument structure focuses on the Board of Health instead of the system. It's a little more difficult, as I said, because of some limited knowledge in the field by boards. One final thing to say about the structure is that for boards, there's much more observation. There's much more 30,000 foot view that should be occurring than the actual engagement level. And I think that trying to foster a strong relationship between the board and the health department is very important in improving the health of the community. A lot of health departments maybe feel that, you know, they don't want to be micromanaged. No one wants to be micromanaged. And a board, whether it's a board of a university, a board of a hospital, board of the health department, they're really there for that greater view. And so if, you know, I think as we work more with boards and health departments and fostering that relationship, that'll really become clear that, you know, the most boards don't have time to micromanage anyways, you know. So both version 1 and version 2 were based on this local governance puzzle. Kind of shows the 5 major pieces of what a board needs to be involved in. First, they need to fully understand their legal authority. They need to assure resources for the health department and for the community in order to perform those essential services. Boards need to develop or advocate for policies. They need to routinely evaluate and monitor and set goals. They need to do internal evaluation as well as external evaluation, as in any field. They also need to assure that the collaboration of the stakeholders exists. From the field, I've heard a lot of user benefits about the governance tool. These are kind of the main themes that I've heard, that the communication and awareness really has increased, that collaboration, even among board members. Oftentimes you'll go to facilitate an assessment and one board member won't even be aware that another board member has been doing something for their community. So that really just gets people talking and encourages that collaboration. It does support education and awareness. We encourage that boards start with understanding their statutes and understanding the 10 essential services if those haven't been gone through an education or ongoing or orientation program. Promotes the awareness of a board's responsibilities, provides those benchmarks, and also provides information on that improvement, whether it's policy development, program evaluation, or grant writing. So as I've said, you become familiar with the assessment instrument. Your board comes together, conducts the assessment. There are several different ways that boards end up doing this. Some block off a day and work for 4 hours and get it all in. Others at their pre-scheduled monthly or quarterly meetings will come together and identify one or two essential services and move through those. So, you know, they might, over the course of a year, complete the assessment. Others come together and do one essential service, say essential service number 5. They do that all together as a group, and then they either split off or everyone does the assessment on their own, and they come back just to talk about it and to communicate in that way and do that at the regularly scheduled board meetings. So, you know, it's not a rigid process. We encourage you to do the assessment in what the way that best serves your community. You know your boards and your health departments better than we do, and we appreciate that. And finally, after the assessment's completed and you send off, you get your assessment results, you work to organize, prioritize, develop, and monitor that quality improvement. So the performance standards gets at both quality improvement and performance improvement. There are many definitions of both. In general, quality improvement is more about the process, while performance improvement takes on more of a human view. The standards result in the identification of areas for improvement, and they can also link to an improvement process. Oftentimes, if you identify an area, you know, then you say, well, what next? And there are other tools out there that make this into an entire process. It's not just about the assessment. You can do the assessment, prioritize, do root cause analysis, and then based on that, use tools such as the Community Guide to Preventive Services to really go through and find evidence-based interventions that have worked in the past. A lot of these, you know, take money, but when you have that evidence, you know, that has come about and that has worked in other communities, it's much easier to apply for grants and receive those grants than it is if you don't have the evidence. So just in general, are most people in here familiar with the Community Guide? Not seeing a lot of head nods. Okay, that's fine. The Community Guide to Preventive Services was developed, I believe, in 1996. It has a companion guide that looks at clinical services that was developed by ARC, the Agency for Health Research Quality. I might be, yeah, AHRQ, ARC. and what it really does is a task force from CDC comes together and evaluates the research that has been done by the Community Guide team, by fellows working for CDC. And they'll come in with a paper on, you know, 83 studies on indoor smoking laws and what all of the research has shown. And then the task force will sit and talk and question, and they'll look at, well, should we recommend this? Is there strong support of this? Is there insufficient evidence? And then they've put all of this together online, free of charge, www.thecommunityguide.org. And it's great searchable database. And so you can then link your, you know, what you identified as your needed improvement areas. And you can look on there and see what evidence-based research has been done and take that to your policymakers, to the health department, you know, into grants. So if you already know that you can develop policies, just use it to develop those policies. So backing up a little bit, after you do the assessment, you send your score to PHF, and you receive a report. And your report's going to answer 3 main questions. It's going to look at how well did the board perform the 10 essential public health services, how well did the board perform on each specific area within the essential service, and also overall, how well is the board achieving optimal activity level. So just looking at an example report, you can see here that this board, you know, they had moderate activity in monitoring, evaluating, and essential service 3, educating and empowering. But then they had optimal in linking to health services and assuring a competent workforce. And everything else kind of fell in the middle there. So looking at how well they performed on specific areas, we have essential service 1 through 4 up here. Just looking at, looking at number 2, they, were excellent in assuring the resources and collaboration existed, but their laboratory review, ensuring that that was completed, fell way behind. So then you can use this to oftentimes pick those low-hanging fruits and do some quick improvement or quality improvement, and also use it on the broader scale, in essential service number 3, if they're assuring the resources, but they aren't reviewing any of the information, how beneficial or how sure are they that the resources that they're assuring are actually the right ones, the ones that would most benefit the community? And the report also answers overall how well are the optimal activity levels being completed. So now I want to break into a brainstorming exercise.
So we might have to wake up a little bit to do this one. We could
break into a couple of small groups to start with and then come together and talk as a whole. Really what we're doing with this is less about identifying the areas of priority and more about just having a discussion, taking everything that was discussed in the presentation and working to look at this worksheet right here. And this is a great tool that you can actually use with your board. And the 4 categories are the activities that require attention, activities that are done well but need to be improved, activities done well but maybe some resources can be shifted in order to focus on higher priority levels. And oftentimes, those others won't be hurt because if we do some quality improvement in one area, it'll continue on to those other areas that we already have strengths in. And finally, the areas where, yes, these activities need some improvement, but we're gonna kind of put them on the back burner for now. And this is in the NPHPSP user guide as well, which CDC provides for free. If you would like to order it, I can also take your orders. And all the tools are free, the local, state, and governance instruments. So then additional things to kind of think about as we're looking at this issue is what has led the board to look like this? And I've given a sample short little paragraph about the what you do in Board of Health. So why are we better in some areas and worse than others? Are there just, basic board qualities that we can tell in one paragraph? What are the most important results that our Board of Health has to deliver? You can take your own experience working in the public health field to answer that question. And also to improve performance within areas, what are some things that we can do? So if you'd like to split into a few groups, would we like to split into a few groups today? They have a great grant writer.
I guess.